Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, April 9th, 2017. May 9th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here at UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is a sunny 43 degrees and still feeling like spring hasn't quite gotten here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Clones, Neural Dust, DARPA, and Brain Surveillance in Schools and Homes. And we had read a disturbing RFP, Request for Proposal, from DARPA at the very end of the show, where they were looking for EEGs that were around approximately $30 each. They want to bring the cost way down so everybody could have an EEG in every pot. EEGs can read emotions and read your brainwaves and tell whether or not little Johnny's got a little zippity-zap problem upstairs. They can determine what is going on. They can use those EEGs not only to do diagnostics, but they can also use that information for neurological surveillance. And that is some of the stuff that the 21st Century Cures Act have been talking about. Is neurological surveillance at a national level for people with quote-unquote mental disease. Now remember, mental disease is about to be redefined. We had good old Tommy Insel, former director of the National Institute of Mental Health for the United States of America, as of October 2015, turned around and left and went to Google's Verily Life Sciences Division to help not only diagnose but cure mental disease. And he is setting out to do that with things such as smartphone applications that can detect disorders by the sound of your voice. And so we've talked about diagnosing mental disorders by the sound of your voice for quite a while now, but add to that now this home portable, home and school, and, of course, Army triage unit, they say. But home and school, $30, so everyone can have an EEG. Be able to just slap that puppy on and give your required brain scan once a week to make sure you're not going off the deep end, to make sure that you are healthy. And if you follow all the steps in the future, we will continue to cover you under our 21st century healthcare panopticon, and we will send you your $600 a month universal basic income check. I mean, I see that happening. This is all going to be a requirement. You're going to have to give that DNA swab to even get into the database to be a part of the 21st century medicine. There will be no entering without that swab. I was just watching something the other day. And they were talking about precision medicine, and that's exactly how it starts. Got to get that swab, Johnny. We got to get you in that database. And good old Georgie Porgy Church wants you in the database as well. I'm hoping this came after the show. One of my listeners out there, Camille. Hi, Camille. Thank you. It was excellent. Had dropped me a note that Georgie Porgy Church was going to be speaking live last night at 6:30 Eastern. And I don't exactly remember the name of the hall, but it was sponsored by one of the Carnegie groups. And George Church talked for about an hour, but all the different technologies that he's working on. And surprise, if you've been listening to this show, you could keep right up with everything Georgie was talking about, because we've dug deep into every single one of those. He even talked about longevity medicine, living for a long time. And someone asked him questions about the Woolly Mammoth project that he's been working on. And that's what made me upset. He was answering Q&A out of the audience, and they just cut off the video at the end. They're like, oop, it's all over. But it should be archived. They said it will be archived out there for on demand for the next month or so. I will see if I can find that link. So any of you that missed it or couldn't hear it, I guess some people were having issues. Some of the browsers were all jumpy. Chrome had an issue, and one of the listeners in chat said IE had an issue. I was able to get it up on Firefox and have it play smoothly, but some other people couldn't. So hopefully the replay of that on archive won't be like that. So I'll make sure I get that in there, but highly worth watching. Talks about a lot of things, and there are a lot of smart people in that room. But he also wants to know how many people had their human genome. And I guess we're a good part of the people in the room. That seems to be the next big thing, is to get your genome sequenced. Because you can show it to your doctor someday. You can find out. Remember, 23andMe got the go-ahead from the FDA to allow, not diagnosis, but I guess allow determination as to whether or not you have a propensity for certain diseases based upon your genetic profile. And for a while, the FDA said, no, you can't do that. You cannot freak people out thinking that they might get a disease like the BRCA gene leading to breast cancer, because that is considered a diagnosis and you are not a doctor, 23andMe. But they changed their mind. They said, hey, make bazillions of dollars. We need everybody's DNA. Of course, 23andMe, ex-wife of Sergey Brin out of Google, and there's vested interest in there. But also, 23andMe got funding from the National Institute of Health. National Institute of Health is the one that's doing the All of Us DNA database to help for research purposes only, of course, wink. And so when you check that box for 23andMe, after paying your $99.95, your data can go into that big research database to help find all the chinks in the human armor. And interestingly enough, speaking of the BRCA gene, did George Church invoke Angelina Jolie at the very beginning of his lecture and about her BRCA gene and having her double mastectomy? And I still, from the very beginning when that happened, I don't know, guys. When that all happened, I started questioning. I'm like, Angelina Jolie had a double mastectomy because some genetic test told her, and I know a lot of her family members had some real big issues and passed away. I think her mom even passed away from breast cancer. So maybe, just maybe, but it just seemed really convenient to me that you had some superstar, some bombshell out there that all these people looked up to in many different ways. And she was going to get a double mastectomy. I don't know. And she's selling genetic testing when she's out there saying that she got her genes scanned and they found this and she's going to run right out. She's not going to do any more testing. And the thing is, I just saw something a few weeks back where they were talking about, you know, all this CRISPRing. Of course, George went a lot into CRISPRing embryos and all kinds of great things that they'll be able to do. But shortly after, I'd say maybe a year, maybe two, after Jolie ran out and got a double mastectomy, and you would think, as being a part of the globalist organization, you would already have like the long vision goggles on, so you would know that they were working on some discoveries. You'd have some scientist who was in love with you back when he was 18 say, hey, Angelina, don't do that. We're coming up with a cure. You know, like the fact that she would run out and go do that while the science was just burgeoning seems completely freaking asinine, okay? And I sometimes really doubt that maybe she really had it done. And I don't want to sound stupid. I'm not one of those conspiracy lunatics. But really, I mean, as a woman, putting myself in those shoes, as a woman, and I'm not even Angelina Jolie, I'm just anybody, I think I would think twice, even if my genetic code showed up with those keys in it as having a propensity for breast cancer. I don't know if I'd have both my boobs cut off just as a quote-unquote preventative measure. I just don't see how somebody could run and do that. But anyway, shortly thereafter, a year or two later, I saw a story. Guess what? They are working on fixing the BRCA gene genetic anomaly so that anyone who comes up with the BRCA positive, they can flip a few switches if you want to get genetically modified, and we might be able to fix it. And they're already talking about doing that with diabetes and a couple other diseases. The Georgie Purgy Church doesn't think it's going to be too long. This is going to be the new way of the world. So, I don't know. I just brought that up because I couldn't believe that he invoked her right at the beginning of his speech. And it made me go, you know, I thought that was suspicious way back when it happened. And now it makes me even more suspicious that George Church mentioned her during his grandiose speech he was giving. So whatever. Speaking of DNA, one side note. I think I've covered this before, but since we're talking about it anyway, I saw a couple stories. One was, and I had to close them because I was at 95% memory, and it was all Chrome tabs. They were taking it up, so I had to close things that were not pertinent to the show today. But I had two things that were up here, since I wasn't planning on talking about DNA. We're doing more brain stuff, but we'll do this for a little bit. One was a story about all the different types of DNA services out there now. There's 23andMe. There's National Geographic, and I don't remember what the third one was, but which one should I do? That was the author of the story. They're like, oh, I don't know which one to pick, which one will be good for me. And of course, my answer would be none of them. Don't do it, people, don't do it. Now, they are going to force you, voluntary, mandatory, remember, if you want to participate in the medical system. I saw that new that Obamacare repeal package nearly passed yesterday. I have not looked at what any of that said yet, but put on a seatbelt, because I'm going to guarantee you this 21st century medicine is going to be the solution to their problem and reaction, the reaction of pulling Obamacare. And it's going to be coming very quickly. Remember, a lot of Congress is invested in biotechnology, so it is all in the best interest of their pocketbooks to quote-unquote bring the cost of healthcare down for the American people while we get rich. And that's what's going to happen. This is just such a dirty stack deck. I can't get over it. And by the way, if you decide that you're going to take up one of those deals they're offering in your daily deal, in your email feed, to get your DNA test, find out if you're related to the Queen, you might want to think twice if you are ever planning on getting life insurance. And I've covered this before, but I'm going to cover it again because I didn't want to close this without reading the story to you. I know I've mentioned it, but I don't know if I've ever read the full story. And the reason why this is important is because they're going to push it for all of us eventually to get genetic testing as part of providing health care. And there are loopholes in the laws that don't prevent discrimination against an individual by places like life insurance companies. So if they happen to find that you, like Angelina Jolie, has a BRCA gene, and you want to get a term life insurance policy for, oh, I don't know, $20,000, enough to maybe bury in the ground. Guess what, Johnny? You're not. Well, I don't know, Janie. Johnny probably might not have the BRCA gene. I don't know if that's female only or not. But let's say Janie, Susie, you are not insurable. And you're not insurable because, do we even have to tell you? Well, maybe we'll tell you. You have a propensity for breast cancer, and that is way too damn expensive for us to cover as a treatment. Now, people were screaming about getting rid of laws that protected people with pre-existing conditions. And they were all crying the blues that this new health insurance, whatever they were going to roll out, was going to get rid of that protection. So life insurance companies, if they saw you had pre-existing condition, you had a liver problem, you had cancer of some kind, and you needed to switch plans for some reason, they could say, "I'm sorry, Charlie, we are not going to take you on as a patient because you're sickly." Well, there was a law that used to protect people against that. Well, guess what, guys? if you get a DNA swab, and there may even be other loopholes out there, but the one that I'm aware of is life insurance. They could see any disease, and you might not even have the disease, just have the genes for a propensity for the disease at some point in the future. It still doesn't mean you're ever going to get it, but it means there's a chance you could get it. But hey, isn't it always roll the dice? If you don't know what your DNA says, then you have a propensity to get any disease, right? I would rather play it safe across the board than be sitting here biting my nails thinking I'm going to die for something that showed up in my genome. All right, so here's a story. If you want life insurance, think twice before getting a genetic test. As genetic testing explodes, warn your auntie and your grandma and your mom, do not do the genealogy and do the cheek swab and submit it with your name and your social security number and anything else that they want you to put in with it. Because guess what, people? This is being used to bag and tag all of us. And if you don't want to give it up for the medical establishment, you already signed up for 23andMe, sucker. We got it already. And you know what? Oh, if you were born in the last 15 years or more even, we got a heel prick. So we put that in our database as well. And that went into the crime database and all kinds of things, just in case you end up dead in a ditch someday. Or, I don't know, hurt somebody and we're looking for you. I mean, it's just so beyond insane. The panopticon is real, and the healthcare establishment that has now really become a part of the military-industrial complex is going to be the new leader of the pack. As genetic testing explodes, health insurers are banned from denying coverage based on the results, but guess what? And they may not be anymore. I don't know, we'll have to look at what happened with the repeal of Obamacare. But guess what? The same does not apply for life insurance. Jennifer Marie, not her real name, should be an ideal candidate for life insurance. She is 36, gainfully employed, and has no medical issues. But on September 15th of last year, Jennifer Marie's application for life insurance was denied. Claim denied. Which is so beyond insane, as they are rubber stamping with a big smiley face approving genetically modified everything, CRISPRed everything, cloned everything without even looking twice. It's a genetic equivalent, but you are defective there, Jennifer Marie. Unfortunately, the letter said, after careful review of your application, how many times have we gotten letters like that? We regret to be able to provide you with life insurance coverage because of your positive BRCA1 gene. Ding, ding. In the U.S., only 1 in 400 women have a BRCA1 or 2 gene, which is associated with the increased risk of breast and ovarian cancer. Jennifer Marie provided a copy of the document to the reporter who wrote the story on the condition that she and her insurance company remain anonymous, as she is still hoping to appeal the rejection. According to recent estimates, 55 to 65% of women who inherit a harmful BRCA1 mutation will develop breast cancer by age 70. I don't know, guys. I think I would rather go with my boobs all my life till 70 and then deal with it. Then in the prime of my life, having them taken off with a mastectomy. Like, I still don't understand the logic there. And I mean, I know cancer is beyond invasive and you don't want to even have to go through that. And so she was just trying to be preemptive, maybe. But on the other hand, who's to say that you have that cancer gene, so if you cut your boobs off, who's to say it's not just going to take root somewhere else? Like, I don't know, in your lymph nodes or somewhere around in an organ that's behind there, like a lung? Just to me, we've learned in all of our research that we do not understand as a scientific community exactly what we're doing when we're tinkering around in genes. And even George Church talked about all that off-target stuff with CRISPR that we've talked about a lot of times and covering that material. they still have issues with hitting off target genes when they're splicing and dicing. You know, they have some new HD high-speed thing that they're working on that's going to make it more accurate. And I think we even looked at that story once, but I don't remember what it was called. It's the next generation of CRISPR. CRISPR's a WMD, don't forget, too, according to Clapper. But, you know, science has no clue. And so if they're definitively saying, oh, you got this gene, oh, it's going to give you cancer here, how do they actually really know that that is 100% of the time? And if you remove the mammary glands, that then it's not going to root itself somewhere else if you have that gene. Just to me, if they could tell 23andMe they can't give medical advice by telling them what genes they have, which they said they just overturned that, FDA gave them the approval. But up until that point, they hadn't had approval because they were afraid people might overreact. Well, then how can they say that this mutation will cause a large percentage of women to develop cancer to then encourage them to go get maybe unnecessary medical treatment? It just doesn't make sense. Not the topic I wanted to talk about at all. All right. Anyway, not everyone with BRCA develops cancer, like I said. So why would you go out and do that? But some informed patients seek highly effective preventative treatments like, you know, double mastectomy and removing your ovaries. Jolie did that too. She says, to reduce the likelihood that they will ever get sick. And I still say bullshit. There are hormones that are produced, oxytocin, progesterone, other things of that nature that make you female. And that do, who knows, other things. I don't even know. They might have other effects that affect other things. Once you remove those from the body, I mean, they even find all kinds of things like the appendix or the adenoids that they didn't think have any purpose at all. And then they find out, oh, they protect your body from infection. I don't remember. There was something special about the appendix. The adenoids protect your body from infection when you're a child. And they used to take them out because you had too many infections, and then it made it even worse because the infections got in deeper. But I was reading something about the appendix the other day as well. The appendix actually is like a, did they say it was a repository for gut bacteria? There was something special about it. And all those years, they told us, oh, it had no use. And it was kind of like the pinky toe. Because we don't use it, it's getting smaller and smaller. It'll eventually go away. Well, they were wrong about that, too. So don't get body parts cut off, people. Please don't, unless it's absolutely necessary. Life or death scenario. Do not let them convince you to get things cut off or out. You know, they one time, probably 20 years ago, my thyroid went all crazy when I was having those autoimmune. It was autoimmune, not Hashimoto's, it was Graves. And I went to see an endocrinologist. This dude was an old crusty. And he was lecturing me, and this is the one recommended by my doctor. He was lecturing me because I said he wanted to, they did all the tests. I drank that radioactive iodine crap that causes salivary cancer now, I guess. They don't do that treatment anymore. And which, again, is great. Who are you going to sue? But this asswipe is telling me that what they do for treatment, even though my thyroid was just a little bit over, there was no cancer, there were no burning nodules in there or anything. It was just autoimmune. My body was attacking my thyroid, and in response, my thyroid was overproducing the TSH or whatever, the T4, they were a couple different tests. And so how they took care of it was they gave you a big fat dose of radioactive iodine, and they knocked it completely out. Or you could have the other one where they just slice your neck open. And they give you what they call the pearl necklace. Usually you'll see people who have been around a lot of radiation with the pearl necklace because they have to remove the thyroid gland. Well, I was like, hell no, you're not doing that to me. I said, why couldn't you just take a look at my thyroid, figure out how overactive my thyroid is, and then maybe look at my weight? And this was my suggestion to him. I was thinking about this logically with my little tickety brain. Like, why don't you just figure out how much I weigh, take a look at how much my thyroid is overproducing, little mathematical formula there, figure out how much you got to give me to knock out one third of the thyroid so then it brings it back within parameters. And the guy looked at me and he says, do you think you're special? This is how we've done it for 50 years and you are not special. And if you don't like it, go find another doctor. And I stood up and I said, you know what? I'm going to go find another doctor. I mean, this guy wanted to hack out an organ. I guess you'd call the thyroid an organ that is 100% necessary for life. If you don't have thyroid hormone, guess what? You die. And, you know, once they take the thyroid out, you have all kinds of issues with trying to maintain weight, and you have to take a replacement hormone forever and ever. I think it was out of cows. I think that's where, because then I went hypo for a while. I think it was out of cows. But guess what? Without treatment, I went to go see my mother's doctor after that. She had an endocrinologist who was her primary care. And her doctor told me that what I had suggested to that other doctor who'd been doing it for 50 years, my suggestion was how they did it now. They didn't give you radioactive iodine, and they didn't cut it out. They monitored it for a while to see how it would respond, and then they'd give you a little bit of medication one way or the other to see if they could tamp it up or tamp it down. So the guy was a total jerk. Don't ever take first opinion. These people don't know exactly what they're doing, and for as much as they try to make you think that they are the authority figure in the white coat, I'm going to tell you I've had about 30 years of bullshit with doctors giving me lines of crap, feeding me drugs, and screwing me up even worse. Thank God, knock on wood, I think I'm kind of okay now, but guess what? I haven't been to the doctor to get any more bad advice for quite a while. So anyway, so in 2008, they passed a law called GINA, and it was called the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act. Federal government barred health insurance companies from denying health care coverage to those who have genetic mutations if they happen to go get one of those DNA tests. But the law, the GINA law, does not apply to life insurance companies, nor does it apply to long-term care or disability insurance. So there are other companies that can discriminate against you for what your DNA swab says. These companies can ask about your health, your family history of disease, or genetic information, and reject people who are deemed too risky without falling under the GINA Non-Discrimination Act law. Patient advocates say they are increasingly concerned about GINA's limitations. And given the explosive growth, and I'm wondering, this was in 2008, so this must have been the law that Obama passed. Given the explosive growth of genetic testing, spending on genetic tests reached $5 billion annually and is on track to reach $15 billion and $25 billion within a decade. 23andMe is going to be one rich company. And remember, they're making even more money because 23andMe spun out a pharmaceutical company that then is going to use your DNA swab that you sent them to find out if you were related to Princess Diana or had a BRCA gene. If you check that box to say you wanted to be a good little citizen and use your DNA as part of their research study, 23andMe can use your DNA swabs as a whole in the big pulsating database that they've been amassing to develop 21st century pharmaceuticals that then they can sell for zillions of dollars. And you provided them free research material. How nice of you. The American Medical Association found that physicians use about 2,000 genetic tests from 1,000 different diseases. Test makers range from Silicon Valley startups to biotech giants. GINA was designed to free people from fear of discrimination so clinical research can scale, like I said, the All of Us program. But now they are wondering whether it worked or not. People started off afraid of DNA testing, and they clearly still are. And guys, this story was from 2016, so I'm going to tell you the whole name of the game has changed now with this precision medicine initiative. They are trying to really pump up how great genetic testing is. again, invoking Angelina Jolie at the beginning of his speech for George Church. I still find it beyond suspect. And they're really trying to use it to sell it to people. Look, be healthy. Look, put on a Fitbit. Soon to be Fitbit of the nervous system created by DARPA and Berkeley. I mentioned yesterday, Berkeley is being part of the mad science conglomerate way back from the days of the Manhattan Project. And sure then shit, don't I look that up to find a link for the show yesterday. And apparently Berkeley is right on the same campus overlooked by Lawrence Livermore Laboratories. Oh, yes, yes, yes. And they had discussed creating the first nuclear weapons for the Manhattan Project right there. So yeah, they're all mad scientists. Always proceed with caution. Don't believe everything they tell you. Do your own research before you step off that cliff. Says, and look at, they even invoke her in this story. The test, available for as little as $250 for the BRCA test, which enables many patients to pay for it out of pocket. Even has a celebrity spokesperson in the form of Angelina Jolie, who underwent a preventative double mastectomy in 2013. Wink. After learning about her cancer risk. And then she wrote a widely circulated op-ed about her experience. Yeah. That's one of those sales sheets I told you about that they get you to write or they put you into when you step up as a, what's it called? Clinical trial. As these tests become more pervasive, patient advocates are ramping up their campaign to end so-called genetic discrimination. Do you think genetic discrimination is going to end? I mean, if we follow this along to where a lot of scientists are kind of pointing that this could end up like genetic eugenics, you know, we find out little Johnny in vitro has some sort of genetic anomaly. Let's flip a few switches and hey, while we're in there, let's make Johnny a little smarter. We want him to be able to play a concerto someday, so let's make him a musical genius and give him supervision. I don't know. X-ray vision eyes. You know, at some point in the future, they are not going to let genetic mutants like you and me be born. We think too much. We're the ones who are not supposed to be. They are trying to breed that right out of us as a species. And as they can go in and start manipulating easier and easier at the embryonic stage. That's something that we are working on here in the UK and in China, as well as probably down dark, scary hallways. One of these days, we're going to have it down to a science. One of these days, before you reproduce, you're going to have to give us a DNA swab. We're going to have to take a look at what kind of potential genetic mutations you might have. Georgia Porgy Church talked about fixing congenital genetic defects and how wonderful that would be to be able to get rid of all these diseases by flipping just one C to G. They were talking about some baby that they had isolated. He had some congenital heart defect. I think he said the muscles didn't properly pump in the heart or something. And so they had done some research on mice. And I think they might have used some of his own skin cells, too, they were using. Just like we found out, a lot of these scientists, it's too difficult to get anyone to sign paperwork to use their cells for experimentation. So a lot of these researchers use their own genetic and bodily material to experiment or inject themselves with stuff. We found some of that longevity medicine. There were a couple researchers that had injected themselves to see what would happen. The Russian dude with the billion-year-old bacteria that he said is going to make him live forever. But they found out when they flipped a G, I don't remember exactly what he said, a G to an A or a G to a C in the CATG of human DNA, they flipped just one protein. And they showed in mouse tests that when the one protein was flipped the one way, there were, they isolated a heart cell, and yeah, it was defective, just like in the baby. And when they flipped it the other way, oh, look, the heart cells went back to normal. Then they did it in, I think they did it in George Porgy's stem cells. He was using his iPS cells, and they made some new heart tissue. Everything was happy. But see, this is how they're trying to now groom us to accept this as a way to fix humans at a embryonic stage, because we didn't have the capabilities before to necessarily, you know, we only had like spina bifida and stuff that they could do, where they were doing all those pre-tests when the baby was only a few months in vitro. But now they're going to be able to actually make changes on the fly, sometimes even before the baby is even fertilized. Do an IVF fertilization in the dish and then put it in there. Or even use the artificial womb. I don't know if you guys saw that new artificial womb. They had a little lamb grown in there. It was really disturbing looking. They had been talking about trying to make an artificial womb for quite a long time. And, you know, if you really think about it, the artificial womb, I mean, great, if a baby can't come to term or whatever, maybe that would give it a second chance on life if it has to come out preterm. But think about all the other implications of artificial wombs. Like, I start thinking of X-Files episodes of bodies hanging in a big cavern somewhere being saved for food. I mean, they could have entire clone armies. Remember China? Entire clone human armies that they in vitro fertilize after splicing and dicing and adding all these special features, making them with superpowers and X-Men capabilities, and then put them in one of these artificial wombs to let them start gestating, percolating, and have them growing to term. And I mean, they haven't grown anything to term yet in an artificial womb, but they will be able to at some point in the future. And it's really frightening because they're going to take reproduction away from humans. And sometimes, honestly, I think that maybe some people shouldn't have that capability. But on the other hand, that's a human right to reproduce yourself. And I mean, we do have this problem called idiocracy now that's happening. You know, the gene pool's got a little small, too much inbreeding in the populations that maybe shouldn't be inbreeding. You know, passing down really bad habits, passing down really bad human traits. But on the other hand, who are we to judge? Who are we to decide that one trait is superior to another? And this really, really gets down a very slippery slope, because we start seeing flashbacks now, boop, 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 to some of the stuff that we've talked about, the whole eugenics program, and something that I always thought was extremely tinfoil hat wearing-y. To me, it's not anymore. We have people like Bill Gates telling us, oh, too many people, humans, on planet Earth, making too much carbon dioxide, creating global warming, too many farts, and other things. And you are making too big of an imprint on the planet. We need to reduce the population. We need to cut down on reproduction. And by the way, we don't need any more defective humans, because it's going to raise the cost of healthcare. I mean, guys, this really is coming. So it's a part of splicing and dicing genes, giving it up to the machine, allowing them to find the chinks in the armor. You think you're doing a good thing because they might be able to cure your disease later in the future, but you're not. You are providing them more fodder to deem you defective in the future. So talking about defective, how about Johnny's ability to learn? Well, Johnny might be learning a little bit slower than the Chinese. Chinese go to school for a lot longer than we do. They do 20 hours a day. I don't know. I was reading something. Maybe it's the South Koreans. Any of those kids, though, over in Asian nations get a lot more schooling than we do here. They take it very seriously. They compete very strongly, and they pump out lots of smart cookies. And I hate to tell you, but we're not doing so well at that in this country, pumping out smart cookies. That's why they're really pushing for us to get kids into STEM, that's science, technology, engineering, and math, because it seems to be something pretty difficult for American children who are loaded up on glyphosate and high fructose corn syrup and have some sort of ADD. But don't worry about it, because we read yesterday that we could just maybe in the future stick a tiny electrode behind our ear and zap ourselves to be able to make it easier to learn things such as a foreign language. Well, I told you, that is all DARPA technology. DARPA is planning to hack the human brain that will allow us not only to learn easier, they say, with the transcranial stimulation, zippity-zapping behind your ear, maybe even hitting that vagus nerve, but DARPA is planning to hack the human brain to allow us to upload skills as well. In March 2016, this is a story May 2nd, 2017, out of futurism.com. In March of 2016, DARPA, the U.S. military's quote-unquote mad science branch, glad someone else sees that, announced their targeted neuroplasticity training program, more affectionately known as TNT. The TNT program aims to explore various safe neurostimulation methods for activating synaptic plasticity. And again, this all goes back to the Brain Project. And did you guys know that not only is Georgie Porgy Church involved in all these other things and creating the synthetic human genome and bringing back the woolly mammoth, but he is also working on the Brain Project? Yes, he is. They are finding ways to zap the brain to help the brain be more plastic, that is, allowing it to be reshaped even after you're set in your ways to learn things like teaching an old dog new tricks, which is the brain's ability to alter the connecting points between the neurons, a requirement for learning. DARPA hopes that building up that ability by subjecting the nervous system to a kind of workout regimen will enable the brain to learn more quickly. And this plasticity question was something that I've been reading quite about over the last few years. There was a lot of research going into that in the neuroscience realms, where they had said that, hey, even though you're older, we always thought that it was not possible to teach older people new whole ways of doing things, but we were wrong. Plasticity lasts throughout your life. You just need to be able to enable it. Well, I guess they found out how. The ideal end benefit of using neurostimulation to modulate synaptic plasticity would be a breakthrough in downloadable learning. And we saw that in Star Trek once, didn't we? Where I think it was Bones. Maybe it was, I don't remember. No, it was Spock. Spock put on the helmet. Oh, and it was the society's whole history was in this helmet. Yes, but downloadable learning. Rather than needing to learn something, for example, like a new language through rigorous study and practice over a period of time, we could basically, quote-unquote, download knowledge after putting our minds into a highly receptive neuroplastic state. Clearly, this kind of research would benefit anyone, but urgent military missions can succeed or fail based on the timing. In those situations, a faster way to train personnel would be a tremendous boon. So as part of this TNT program, DARPA funded 8 projects at 7 different institutions. All these projects are part of a coordinated effort, all part of the Brain Project. They will first study the fundamental science undergirding the brain's plasticity, and it will conclude with, yes, human trials. The first portion of this TNT will work to unravel the neural mechanisms that allow nerve stimulation to influence brain plasticity. A second portion of the program will practically apply what it has learned from a variety of training exercises. In the end, DARPA's goal is to further enhance the most effective existing training methods so the armed forces can operate, of course, at their full potential. I read a story the other day where they were studying brain, whatever you want to call it, brain signaling. We talked about that. Brain works between like 0 and 30 or 0 and 40 hertz typically. And they now are trying to figure out how not only to define those different frequencies, but what those frequencies do, how they can manipulate them. We looked at that ELF emit that actually allows you to turn up or turn down your moods, which is another thing that DARPA has been working on, is being able to learn to control moods. But there was something here about them teaching artificial intelligence now. Artificially intelligent robots using brainwaves. The military is using human brainwaves to actually teach robots to shoot. Yes, thank you, Lady Pitbull, for this story. Modern sensors like robot googly eyes can see farther than humans. Electronic circuits can shoot faster than nerves. And muscles can then pull the trigger. Humans still outperform armed robots in knowing what to shoot at. But new research funded in part by the Army may soon narrow that gap. Researchers from DCS Corp and the Army Research Lab fed data sets, ding, 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 of human brainwaves into a neural network, which is a type of artificial intelligence, which learned to recognize when a human is making a targeted decision based upon their brainwaves. They presented their paper on it at the annual Intelligence User Interface Conference that was held in Cyprus this past March. And why is this such a big deal? Well, machine learning relies on highly structured data, numbers in rows that software can read, but identifying a target in the chaotic real world is incredibly difficult for computers. But the human brain does this real easily. So again, another chink in the human armor. We can identify targets easily, but computers cannot. So let's use the human brain. Let's crack its secrets, and then let's figure out how to apply this to artificial intelligence so they can wipe us out in the future. The human brain does it easily, structuring data in the form of memories, but not in a language machine can understand. This is a problem that the military has been grappling with for years, but don't worry about it, because we are working on it. We often talk about deep learning, and the challenge there for the military is that it involves huge data sets and a well-defined problem, says Thomas Russell, a chief scientist for the Army, at a recent National Defense Industrial Association event. Their research branched out of a multi-year, multi-pronged program called the Cognitive and Neuroergonomics Collaborative Technology Alliance. We know there are signals in the brain that show up when you perceive something that is salient. And now they are going to find out how to tap into that. Researchers hope their new neural net will enable experiments in which computers can easily understand when a soldier is evaluating a target in a virtual scenario. So they're going to be using video games or augmented or virtual reality as well, as opposed to having spent a lot of time teaching the system how to understand structures of different individuals' data, eye movements, and their brain responses. And the goal one day is a neural net can learn instantaneously, continuously, and in real time by what? Oh, observing brainwaves of humans as well as eye movements of highly trained soldiers doing their job. So let's give it all up again to the machine so they can learn all of our little secrets that make us superior. And that's what you don't want to do. like I've said so many times, do not give up the chinks in the armor that will be our full undoing as a human species. Well, don't worry about that, because we have mind-reading algorithms that can also reconstruct what you are seeing while using a brain scan data. Perceived images are hard to decode from fMRI scans, but a new kind of neural network now makes it easier and more accurate. One of the more interesting goals of neuroscience is to reconstruct perceived images that are being analyzed by brain scans. And the idea is to work out what people are looking at by monitoring the activity in their visual cortex. Now, as we read yesterday, that DARPA is working on EEGs to put into every classroom and home. And now we're talking about brain scans that can actually not only learn and feed it to neural networks what you're seeing and doing in your brain, but also get the images and figure out what you're thinking about, what you're seeing. We got good old Elon Musk that wants to put a neural link in, hook you up to the machine. Guys, this isn't going to turn out well. It really, really isn't. We are giving up every single bit that makes us human and allowing them to recreate human beings in a more superior fashion. These will not be meat bags like we are. These will now be the tin cans and soon to be the skin jobs. Another expert now joins Stephen Hawking and Elon Musk in warning about the dangers of AI. Yes, remember they came out, it was a whole consortium of very well world-renowned scientists that came out and said, hey guys, guess what? Creating super artificial intelligence that will eventually become smarter than humans. Remember, we found out way back when that even robots can evolve now. Mommy robots are building better baby robots. And as time goes on, they're going to get even better at evolution. We probably should rethink this. This is going to turn out well for us when we become the inferior species. Well, another one stepped right up. In a video posted by Big Think. Remember, I told you it's that science publication that's dumbed down for people who don't get all of the intricacies of science, but sometimes they have some good little snippets. Usually it's in a video and it's somebody that you know talking, telling you all about a technology. AI expert Michael Vassar shares his belief that artificial superintelligence, and that is something they're working on right now, will wipe out humanity if we do not approach AI with significant caution. Now, speaking about superintelligence, I also read a story yesterday that a professor that had just retired last year, I believe, out of UC Berkeley, he had worked 40 years in computer intelligence and design. He was a pretty smart cookie. Google has convinced him to come out of retirement and to come give them a hand, creating their new processor that will literally double the thinking capabilities of their Google's DeepMind project. If they don't do this, if they don't get this guy to help them, because I guess it's really complicated and there's no one else that'll be able to help them. If they don't do this, they're going to have to double the size of their data center to get this level of supercomputing or superintelligence that they need. But this guy, he said, hey, I'll come out of retirement and help you. I don't remember his name and I don't have the story up, but I'll put it in the notes. I'll go look for it. I know where I found it. So he is going to help Google now double the capability of their superintelligence. Put on a seatbelt, people. This is happening way faster than we ever imagined. I just watched something, too. It was a documentary I started watching last night about all of these technologies. It was a 3-hour documentary, actually. It was on Amazon, one of the freebies on Amazon Prime. And the guy started out as a pastor. He was a religious preacher or something. And he started watching all this stuff quite a few years ago when they started with genetic engineering and that. And he's like, whoa, this probably isn't too cool. Started speaking out against it from a religious perspective. But he decided, since the entire transhumanist community came out against him and started calling him a tinfoil hat wearing lunatic and putting him down every time he came out and did a lecture or something, he decided that he was really going to put his teeth in deep and start studying the science behind it so he could understand all these little bits and pieces and then interview a lot of these transhumanist experts and scientists who are working on this technology and do a documentary. And you want to know what? He came to the same conclusions when he started talking to a lot of these professionals in the field. And guess what they were saying? Just what we've been saying. It is not 100 years from now. People who think that 100 years from now, we will finally have super artificial intelligence so we don't have to worry about it, are completely 100% wrong. This is happening right now. It is moving very quickly. And we could be overtaken in our not too different distant future, saying homage to our new robot overlords. And last but not least, they have discovered intelligence, again, studying the brain and how to recreate it, actually may stem from a very basic mathematical algorithm that runs inside of the human brain. This development is huge for AI, since artificial neural networks operate just like the brain, and they could apply this formula, N equals 2, little caret I minus 1, to give them the key to true intelligence. Now, is that what we really need? Computers that actually think exactly like humans? Well, maybe. But don't worry about it. We got neural dust. That'll be able to monitor your brain, and we'll make sure we figure out exactly how that is happening. So we will be able to not only recreate the human brain, but we'll be able to enslave all human brains as well. All right, guys, so make sure you stick around. Ms. Lonnie Clark is live up next. Her midterm tests should all be done. And it is Tuesday night, so there's tons and tons of live radio and new shows. We got Ron at 7. We have Barbarian Lounge at 8. We have Primetime Boys at 9. We have Anti-Media at 10 and at 11. So, all right, guys, everybody have an awesome Tuesday.